You're listening to the Go Birds Podcast.
Hello, it is the Go Birds Podcast presented by the Bet Parks Casino and Sportsbook app. You love to play, you play to win, you bet. Bet Parks, Elliot Short Parks, James Seltzer with you. Obviously, big day, E, back in your happy place.
Dude, I couldn't be more happy right now. Let me tell you, I woke up, set the alarm for 6 a.m. this morning. I was up at 5:30. It didn't even matter. It's like Christmas morning. I remember back when I was little, I would sleep like in a guest room before Christmas just so I could make sure I was up in time. It felt like Christmas morning. We'll obviously get into it, but the fun thing is it's not the only exciting thing that we got going on with the pod today.
About Christmas morning. So this is like a Christmas morning that I've been waiting for way too long. A voice you know, a name you know, a person who has been a big part of this thing, started this whole thing, made it what he was. And for the first time in a long time, we're going to welcome back in one of the founding members of the podcast. You might know him by a certain name. My daughter knows him as Uncle Brandon, one of the best, my best friends on the planet. And we're so happy to have him back. Brandon Lee Gowden from BleedingGreenNation.com. What up, baby?
Let's go. That's how you know it's a big day.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Nice to be on any podcast at all, first of all. Second of all, specifically this one that, yes, once upon a time, this podcast feed was started all the way back in 2013. Crazy. Somehow it's 11 years later. This is my 12th training camp. I don't know where the time has gone, but excited to be here with you guys.
Let me tell you. So James can vouch for this, but the second that we saw, unfortunately, the Bleeding Green Nation pod wasn't happening. The first thing I said to James, I texted him, like, we have got to get BLG on the pod. Not only because as the two hyphenated reporters in the city, we need to stand together. You a little taller, but standing next to each other. I came onto this pod 5 years ago at this point, which is wild. And you are the one that started this pod. You and James, obviously, all the work you guys did to get it ready. So it has been an honor to kind of, be a part of it, and it wouldn't be happening without you. So I say to James all the time, I love talking to you at practice. I did not do it today specifically so I could save my save your takes for the show, but it is a true honor to have you on, and we have listeners that still talk about how they miss you. So I know they're very excited to hear you as well.
I appreciate that. And again, very glad to be here. I haven't podcasted with James truly a long time. And
we've talked about it many times, and the many times we've hung out since.
Yes.
Now, I'll tell you this. This is the first time in a long time that my wife might actually listen to a podcast that I do. She was so excited that you were coming on. So, yeah, it's awesome.
Man. I am her favorite, as you once said.
Without a doubt. It's not even a question. And my daughter's favorite as well, Uncle Brandon Tess.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Very cool. But yeah, so, and look, not only this, it's the first day of camp. Like, I'm very excited. Let's get in.
All right. Yeah, let's get into it. This is going to be a lot of you guys telling me. Obviously, before we dive into what was on the field, I think we should address the what I think most fans were coming into today waiting to see and hear about, the two press conferences, particularly one. Sirianni, I don't think there's too much to say about it. We can get into how he addressed it earlier. But let's start with the Jalen thing, because you guys were both in the room for it. Elliot, you were the one who started to ask a question, and Jalen just shut it down, goes for like a minute and a half. And, I think it was his way of addressing it. It wasn't like he was overly effusive about Nick, but he did include Nick in talking about, Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman and Nick and trusting them. I'll start with you, Elliot. Your thoughts being in the room, attempting to ask the question, and then what you thought of Hertz's answer.
Yeah, so I had forgot that Jalen sometimes likes to start his pressers almost like a State of the Union. So I think he sat down ready for a statement. I'll be honest, like in the dugout behind the scenes baseball, like I wanted to be the one to ask that question. Like I was front and center, like I wanted to. So I probably came in a little hot, but once he was done, I asked it again. And so I have like two main thoughts, I think, of Jalen. One, and I'm curious to see if BLG agrees with this. I do think it was a different Jalen to an extent. I felt there was, in my opinion, a concerted effort from him to be a little more, his answers were longer. I thought he was a little more jokey. This is a dumb thing, but DeCamera brought it up. Like, there was like times where he smiled. I thought it was a Jalen that got the message from either from what's been said in the media or from, you know, internally with the team that they need him to be just a little more at the podium. So I thought he was that. Now, his answer on Nick, I will say, was not, you know, like, I don't think we're starting this pod or you guys will start the shows tomorrow being like, oh, what a great answer. He was kind of like, yeah, I get along with Nick, but it's all about the team and the team needs to get along and everything. He didn't really dive into his relationship with Nick. So if we really wanted to nitpick, we could say he dodged it a little. But I think overall, I didn't leave that press conference feeling like it was the same, like, you know, Jalen's mad, Brian Johnson is gone. He's, you know, not giving you anything at the podium. I thought he put a concerted effort out there, and overall his answer probably checked, you know, the most boxes you could kind of hope for.
Yeah, I feel you. I thought the Sirianni again, though, it seemed like he knew he had to throw Nick in there, and it almost was a struggle for him, at least the way I saw it. BLG, you were in the room. What did you think of the way he addressed it?
Yeah, I think the situation was not exacerbated really either by Jalen or Nick. So I think the Eagles did well and the PR team did well to make sure they were ready for this. So kudos in that regard. But still, I think ultimately what was originally the most interesting thing when all of that kind of was really coming to a head at late in minicamp there was what was not said. And I still think when you're looking at what was not said was like, it wasn't like, oh, this is a total non-issue. We love each other. It's great. And maybe that's okay, because maybe that would have come off as a little too try hard and not sincere and not authentic. So I think they kind of towed the line between those two things of trying to be like, of downplaying it well, but not to the point where it seemed like kind of phony.
BLG, yeah, go ahead, Ian.
Well, I was going to say, I do think he could have maybe gone, and we're probably at this point, like, what's the expression? Like the Zapruder film, or what is it?
Oh, Zapruder film. Yes.
Yeah, that's the Zapruder the film. Like, yes. We're probably like
breaking it down like that. Yes. You're absolutely right. And we're talking about intonation and, you know, all that stuff. I know. Yeah, that's like, what we do as well. You know, I mean, that's all we have to go on.
We've talked about this press conference for 4 months at this point, it feels like. So, of course, that's what we're going to do. Again, it just felt like he skirted by it a little. Like, it was, hey, how do you get along with Nick? Oh, me and Nick get along great, but like, I get along great with everybody, and we need to be a close team if we're going to
get exactly.
I think we want some kind of antidote from him of, look, I get along with Nick great. We text during the off season. You know, I saw his kids a month ago, and it, you know, those type of things that you probably want to hear. Doesn't mean they're not happening. Jalen did say later in the press conference that we see what he wants us to see. Like, he's not showing us everything. It would be awesome to see more. I do think Jalen would benefit from it. I think fans would benefit from it. So, you know, we talked on a previous pod about what we kind of expected. I think they left this, and Brandon put it perfectly, like the situation was not exacerbated. I don't think we're going to have the morning show tomorrow or any of the shows saying, oh, here we go. Like, this was his chance and he didn't do it. And why won't he listen? Like, I thought it was a good press conference overall. It just wasn't like a home run.
Yeah. I think it was more like solid than good. I get your point, but I do think that, you know, we did want, to your point, we hear what he wants us to hear. We see what he wants us to see. I would like to see that you don't hate our coach. Like, honestly, like I that's all I want to know. And it didn't. And again, to your point, I agree with you guys. The last press conference, that was a bad answer. We all know it. It had us talking about it for months when we shouldn't have been. It wasn't a bad answer today. I just don't think it was a good answer. I think it was fine. It was like the bare level that he had to reach to be acceptable to try and move on from this. But I can't say I'm not still concerned about the relationship. BLG, Sirianni's answer, I thought was better. You know, did the whole, I can only go by what I interact, our interactions are. But it wasn't, you know, overly over the top either. What do you think about Nick addressed as well?
Yeah, I'll go back to what I said. Like, I don't, it was about what was not said. And it wasn't that, again, it was like, oh, that was blown out of proportion. I mean, how many times do players and coaches like love saying that, right? Like, oh, that was taken out of context, even when it's like in full context a lot of the time. But that was not the approach here. And again, I think they were cognizant of that. I did not think they wanted to be too defensive about it. I think that was very intentional. But again, yeah, ESP asked me about it after the Nick presser, and I kind of shrugged when he asked what I thought about Nick's answer. And I was like, it's still about what he didn't say. There isn't like this like full-throated endorsement still of like, so that's where I kind of come down on it.
Yeah, so I thought his answer was really good. I think that the way to say it is, look, I can only go off of how when I interact with him, how that is. And I think there is a lot of truth to that. I do wish I would have followed up and asked him, did he talk to Jalen about it? Because if there was like a report that, you know, like someone, like a source at WIP says James and Elliot's relationship is a work in progress, I feel like I would at least shoot you a text like, yo, like I saw this, isn't this wild, right? So,
I do
kind of wish you would have followed up on it. I would say with Sirianni too, I didn't get a vibe that it was like, you know, nah, we're good, like no problems. I think he was kind of like, look, when me and him interact, it's good. And that's kind of all I can go off of. So I thought it was a fine answer by him. I agree. It was probably a little better than Jalen's. And that is what Nick is. Like Nick is, you said this on the morning show today, James, and I think it's true. And it also shows how much first impressions really matter. Like Nick is not bad at the podium. I know that now he gets treated as such because of what happened initially, but he's good at like putting out fires and stuff. So I thought his answer, like the logic was good. BLG, there was the quote from Howie that I thought was really good. Curious for your perspective on it. Like when Howie talked, he was questioned about the coordinator thing and how he picked the coordinators. And his logic was basically like, look, when we drafted Quinion, Nick knew the head coach. Nick talked to the head coach. Nick got information. He brought it to me. When we were hiring coordinators, I knew Kellen Moore. I knew Vic Fangio. I brought that information to him. I think that's probably painting it a little rosy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's true too. Like I do. Like I do think that.
You know that Howie made the call. Like you don't think Do you think that if Nick Sirianni had said, "I don't want Vic Fangio. I don't like the way he does it. I don't want him." The Eagles would have been like, "Okay, no problem." They wanted Fangio last year, but like they were gonna like I don't believe, and I don't think Nick would have done that. I don't think he would have been like, "I don't want Fangio." But I think it was a little more, hey, Nick, these are the guys we like. What do you think? Than it was, hey, Nick, here's some information on guys we know. Make a decision.
So I think a couple of things can be true. Holistically, I agree with you. I think if Nick was like, I want this guy, that Jeffrey and Howie would be like, but we're not hiring that guy. But I do think Nick wanted Fangio. So I think it's a little bit of both, if that makes sense.
Sure. I mean, on the specific case, who knows? BLG, your thought?
Exactly, yeah.
The Kellen Moore one is a little hard to sell from a standpoint of they interviewed him to be head coach before Nick Sirianni.
Right,
and also, they also had interested him in 2020, too, to be like Doug's OC potentially. So it's like you know, it's pretty obviously. I think the organization has had their eye on Kellen Moore for a while. And I don't really think there's an obvious connection between Nick and Kellen. Anyway, I think it's an interesting point. I mean, I thought the Howie Nick presser had multiple interesting points in there. Among them, to turn it back to Hurts for a second, I think one thing I've been kind of getting sick of discourse-wise is this, and some of this is from Hurts himself, this idea that like it's a new play caller. And I get that. And that's not an ideal thing, but that is the standard in the NFL
totally.
Today.
Yeah, totally.
Like there,
this answer stood out to me.
If I'm not mistaken, I don't think there's any OC in the NFL that has been tenured beyond 2022. Like, think about that. That's not that long ago.
Yeah, Kellen Moore is the most qualified offensive coordinator in the league.
Outside of like McVay and Shanahan, exactly, and head coaches
who call their own plays. Formal OC. Yeah. So it's just like, that's not the standard that you're going to have this play caller there who's there for 10 years. So like, sorry, that's the reality. It's not ideal. It's not perfect. But like, that is the realistic standard. And I thought Howie Roseman, he didn't directly, you know, make that comp, but he did talk about how like, you know, continuity is not going to happen. And I think this is my conspiracy theory. That's more of what he was referring to in that answer when he brought up the fact that you're going to have turnover here.
Real quick, I thought it was funny how he kept going, not talking about Jalen.
Well, that was the point. I think that's totally what he meant. And I think he was absolutely talking to Jalen. And I think it was a bit of a like, hey, man, grow up. This is the way the NFL works type of situation. Like, yep. I'm sorry, but that's the way the NFL is. There's always going to be turnover. They didn't want Shane Steichen to leave. It's not like they were like, hey, let's switch it up, man. Like, right. You know, and look, but I'm sorry, your guy in Brian Johnson didn't work out, which I think we all know is really what Jalen's talking about. Like, the continuity thing matters to him, of course, but I think it's, hey, you got rid of my guy after 1 year. I think that was unfair. I think that's kind of the subtext there of what that is. And like, man, it is what it is. You guys stunk last year, and you have to own your role in it too. So, I thought overall, to your guys's, you know, initial point, I don't think any of these press conferences had anything that was disastrous, yeah, or whatever. You know, it didn't make me worry. And I do think Nick is much better than he used to be. I just think he's not an eloquent speaker. So people are always going to kind of, you know, it is what it is. He doesn't speak eloquently. So people think he sounds dumb, but he doesn't. If you actually listen to what he's saying most of the time, but sometimes he'll fumble on his words and all that. It is what it is.
So
all
right, I had another quick thing from a press conference standpoint. Beal, were you in AJ Brown? Were you there? Were you in?
I saw some of it. Yeah.
Okay. So AJ Brown talked about the changes in the offense, and I don't remember if he was asked exactly about the 95% thing that Jalen had said in terms of changes, but he said like a few times in the press conference that it's not that big of a change on the offense. Mm-hmm. And the biggest change is terminology. I just thought it was interesting because,
which is Jalen, what players on the station have been saying, like Richie, right, and Ike and these guys, they keep saying, yeah, the terminology might be really new, but I'm sure the offense isn't that new. You know?
So I just thought that was noteworthy.
It's different positions too. You know what I mean? Like what a wide receiver has to learn maybe in a new scheme is a lot different than what a quarterback would have to learn. So yeah.
No. Yeah. It's a fascinating point. All right. Let's get into it. Do you guys have anything else from the press conferences before we get to actually what we saw on the field and actually talk football? I think we all would like to talk about what you guys saw out on the field, football for the first time in months. We've talked enough about press conferences for the last 6 weeks. I'm sure we'll continue to, but to your point, I do want to say, I don't think Jalen was perfect. It wasn't great, but I think it was acceptable. But I'm still, my radar is still up on the Nick Jalen relationship. Sure. And I think they didn't squash that in a way they could have today. All right, let's get into what you saw on the field. Elliot, I mean, let's start with, you know, everyone. We're all waiting for it. We all know. I mean,
we all know it's
the quarterback stats. The first day, we're back. Tell us about the process. Any new additions to the stats this year and what you saw from Jalen?
All right. So I think I want to do this like a bit of a different way. First of all, let me say, I did chart shotgun versus under center.
Look
for
at
the
you.
People. For the people, because the people needed it. I'm going to tell you the stats. And before I say it, I want to see what BLG thought of the way he played.
Oh, I like people, this. Yes.
Right. So I'll tell you the stats and then you, BLG, you tell me what you think of them. So,
okay.
Elliot, you just jump in right after and give me your thoughts. Yep. I'll lay back.
So I had him down as 15 to 16, one touchdown and no interceptions. What'd you think of his play?
Thought he was efficient. I've been doing my own system. I'm going to be doing at Bleeding Green Nation is like a thumbs up, thumb sideways, thumbs down. Keep it simple each day.
Yeah.
And I would go one thumbs up today. I thought he was efficient. I thought he looked so much more crisp and comfortable than he did the last time we saw him in minicamp. He didn't do anything like overly flashy. There's one good completion to Goddard downfield. Nothing like breathtaking, nothing amazing, spectacular. But overall, obviously, the numbers kind of speak for it. He was efficient, didn't let the ball hit the ground, other than the one incompletion. That's when there was a drop, right, by Devontae. And that was a perfect pass. So, I'm not going to say, it knocked my socks off. It was the best practice I've ever seen, but it was good.
So when you were saying the thumbs up, sideways, thumbs down, I thought you might go sideways, and I don't think that would be unfair. Like, I think if you want, so I gave him an A for the day. I do think there is a world where you can say an A practice should probably look a little more special than he did today. Right. But what I thought was really encouraging about this today was he didn't look special. He looked efficient. Like, I thought he did an excellent job not leaving the pocket. Saquon had four targets for four catches. To me, that's a sign that he was checking it down instead of rolling out. Like, me and BLG have watched many a practice where Jalen's just not throwing the ball. Like, 7-on-7, he's holding on to it.
So much. When you run in 7-on-7, it's pointless. What's the point of that?
It's a complete loss of a down. But even in 11-on-11s, there's times where he really, like, cuts the field in half and moves upfield. I had him down today as one quarterback run, and that run was in – or two. And one of those was an intentional run where they did, like, motion before the snap. He faked it to Saquon, and then he ran. So, I know. People were very excited about the motion.
Motion!
I know. It's the key to everything. But so I thought what was impressive about Jalen was that he I thought he made good decisions. I didn't think there was a single pass he made that he put the ball in harm's way. You're right. The pass to Devontae, if I really wanted to nitpick, like it wasn't a good spiral, which I think is why Devontae dropped it, but it did hit him in the hands in stride. Like he should have caught the ball. So he was really close to being 16-16. The Goddard touchdown, I'm going to give it a little more credit than maybe it sounds like you are. He had a good protection and Goddard was open. So this was not like, oh my God, Josh Allen arm, like anything like that. But I thought that he put good touch on it down the field. He didn't like laser it in there. He kind of, I have to rewatch it, which I obviously can't. It almost looked like he threw it off his back foot, just kind of like lofting it to him. And I thought it became a really catchable, easy ball for him. So while it wasn't like, you know, four touchdowns in the red zone, and they didn't do red zone, which is very noteworthy in terms of touchdowns. The fact he got a touchdown from 35 yards out, I think is impressive in these drills. So 15 out of 16 for one touchdown. Like, yeah, I think he gets an F.
Wow, this is I'm excited. Look, I would love to hear that he looked amazing and it was the greatest practice you've ever seen, to BLG's point. But I said coming in, I want him to be efficient. I want him to take what's given to him. I want to see that type of stuff. So,
and that's what he did.
And that's huge. And you guys mentioned the motion. What did you guys think? And I'll get to some specific battles and players with you guys. But BLG, I'll start with you. What did you think of actually how the offense looked in it, you know, the motion, obviously, but just from a scheme perspective? I know they're not running the most complicated stuff on day one, but did it look different?
Well, the motion is the big story, as we've joked about here. And as like big on Twitter, I'm seeing. But also I think the tempo was another kind of thing that kind of got lost here. I don't know how you feel, ESP, but I felt like they were like, this is a pretty like juiced up, energetic pace for the offense to start. And I think that probably helped with the efficiency. Like they were really kind of, they had the defense, I think, on their heels a little bit at times with how fast they were running everything and operating everything. And speaking to that point, I mean, you have Mekhi Becton.
I was going
to
bring that up.
Yeah, like throwing up.
I heard about it on Twitter.
But yeah. that speaks to like the offense was moving. They were like, things were like clicking fast. This was not, I think back to last year by contrast, I don't know why I remember this because I'm a sicko apparently, but like I remember the Eagles started out like rusty. They had like a really rusty start to training camp last year. So that's not the case this year. I thought they were really smooth as a whole, not just Jalen Hurts, but the whole offense.
No, I agree. So the tempo thing, I'm happy you brought up because AJ talked about that after practice and said that it is something they're working on. To your point, BLG, the first practice last year, Hurts was 6-10, then he was 11-14. So like they did start out
pulling up the stats there. That was strong.
Yeah, got to.
On the
got
fly,
to.
Baby.
Got to. I keep them all open now.
In training camp form right now. I love it.
The Becton thing, not to get like graphic and people have weak stomachs. I've not often seen someone projectile vomit. It was gross. Like he was tired. It was clear liquid too. Like he did it on the field as well. Like on the sideline, I feel like everybody was like, bro, can you just like take two steps to the right? Like we're about to be practicing there. But I think in terms of the offense, I agree with you on the tempo thing. They definitely did that. AJ talked about it, like I said, it's something they're working on. From the shotgun perspective, so here's what I had. Obviously, in 7-on-7, you're in shotgun every time. So in the 11-on-11 drills, shotgun, 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 under center, which was like a Jet Motion wide receiver run, shotgun, 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 shotgun. So
he was, shotgun. All right.
He was predominantly in the shotgun. Now we'll see. Look, it's day one. They could have been working on the shotgun plays, or it could be a day where I come back and he's under center 90% of the snaps. But I do think when we talk to about like 95% changing and those things, I think he'll maybe be under center a few more snaps. They've definitely added a BLG. I don't know if you've noticed this, like in the running back drills before practice, they now practice like a jet sweep handoff instead of just the running backs. Like they have Covey do it. They have Smith do it, and not Devontae, the rookie. And then they have Campbell do it. So to me, the biggest change in the offense that I noticed today was probably like the motion and just like having like the running back like a jet sweep handoff thing.
Yeah. To a larger point, that's going to be fascinating this whole year. Like how much of what we haven't seen in the past is truly, you know, just Sirianni and not just like Jalen Hurts' preferences as well. I think, you know, the shotgun thing is not just a Sirianni thing. I think it's a big time Jalen Hurts. He likes big to time, see the agreed. Field from that perspective kind of thing. So, yeah, that's certainly something we'll be monitoring here, too.
One thing I was looking out for, sorry, really quick, and maybe I just didn't notice it. I'd be curious if you did. It didn't seem like they split Saquon out very much. It felt like he mostly came out of the backfield. And to your thing about what Jalen prefers, and this goes back to the McCaffrey discussion we've had, James, like McCaffrey, a lot of the damage he does is going in the slot and going over the middle of the field short. Like Jalen is willing to throw the ball down the middle of the field, like 10, 15 yards. A lot of his attempts are like a middle field, like deeper, where I think he can see more. I think with McCaffrey, like the routes he runs over the middle, Saquon can run them. I mean, he's not the route runner that McCaffrey is, but I did not notice a lot today of Saquon going out wide, or sorry, going into splitting up in the backfield and cutting across the middle. Like to your point about the offense being Nick or Kellen's, I think a lot of what we're going to see is what Jalen is comfortable with, like being in the shotgun, like et cetera.
Yeah, I don't know that Jalen Hurts has more than one completion to Saquon inside the numbers since OTAs began. I'm not sure about
that. Yeah, you're right. Actually, that's a great point. I don't think I've seen a single one. I know in OTA he had one completion to him that was right along the sideline, and today I think they were all like that. It's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's get to who stood out. ESP, obviously we've already talked about Jalen. Who's someone or a couple people who really stood out to you today on either side of the ball?
It's a good question. I was thinking about this driving home. So like, I think to go with the theme of the offense, they were just kind of solid. Like AJ, I have down as 3 targets, 3 catches. I don't think there was any special catches. The best play of the day on offense, in my opinion, was a throw from Kenny Pickett to Grant Calcaterra that was like a 15-yard, maybe more than that, maybe like 20 yards. Like, great coverage. Pickett put it just over the fingertips. It was a great catch as well. I thought that was like the wow throw of the day. So on offense, I didn't think anybody really stood out. It's hard to tell sometimes from being on field level. I didn't think the protection was like awesome today. I felt there were a few times where Hurts had to step up in the pocket, and to his credit, I thought he did a good job. I saw Huff beat Mailata at least once for a sack. So I didn't think the protection was awesome today. It's worth noting Landon Dickerson didn't practice, which is why Mekhi Becton was out there. So Tyler Steen was at right guard, Becton was at left guard, and then the other three were regular. But on offense, I don't think anyone had like a wow day outside of, you know, what we've kind of talked about.
BLG?
Yeah, I don't think there was a true standout today. I will say, I guess maybe a more noteworthy player, not because he did anything amazing, but because he was involved a decent amount, was Paris Campbell, who I made this point back in the spring because it really stood out to me. Again, Paris Campbell has not done anything that's like really amazing or exceptional. It's also kind of fine, I think, if you're, you know, for a realistic expectation out of a third receiver, won't even be the third target in the offense. But I think what's most important about most relevant to that kind of role, does Jalen Hurts trust this guy to actually target him? And I think that's clearly yes. Like, we've seen, like, just not even too long into practice, Campbell had multiple targets right away. And again, they were like a 5-yard completion, a 6-yard completion. So nothing thrilling, but still the fact that Jalen Hurts will throw to him and he gets open at some point, that is what kind of stood out to me in offense.
Well, I think that's a great point. Yeah, go ahead,
Ethan. To that point, in the first three team reps they did, 2 11s and 2 7 and 1 7, Paris Campbell had 3 catches and 1 run. Now, obviously, I think we can all safely say Devontae is going to get more targets this year, but Devontae only had one. So to BLG's point, like, Campbell was very involved. And I think he is almost cemented in there as that third receiver, unless he obviously gets injured or they make a trade that's unexpected. I think he will be the third guy.
Yeah, well, like we've talked about when they brought him in, it's clear they've liked him for a long time. They talked about how they were going to draft him instead of J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. You know, it's it's a player they've had their eye on, and it's a player Sirianni knows, and he's a much better option than Quez Watkins. You know, sight unseen for me on the Eagles. I know he's a better option. I do think BLG's point is salient, though. I think the fact that the most important thing with this role is, will Jalen trust him? We've seen spots where Jalen just doesn't go to certain guys in spots, and Quez certainly has had those moments. So I think it's a really important point that, you know, look, it's going to be the fifth option on offense. The third wide receiver is important, but it's more important for other teams than it is for the Eagles. He's the fifth option on the offense. He just has to be that someone, when he's the open guy, Jalen will throw to him instead of trying to force it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. That's the key. All right, let's get to some of the, you got some, Elsie?
I was going to say Jeffrey Lurie was there watching proudly as Ooh. Paris Campbell. You know, that was his
yeah,
guy. That
his
was
his guy, yeah, man. He knew.
He was there watching saying, this is what dreams along. Are made of.
I mean, who really runs this team? We all know.
That's exactly
all right. Elliot, let's get to some position battles. Obviously, hard to tell with the, I think the right guard position we talked about, probably the number one offensive, really the only big outside of third wide receiver, which you've commented on, that we really don't know what's going to happen there. But, you know, Steen would have gotten the start, we know, if Dickerson had been practicing. No, I know. If Dickerson had been there, you know, he would have been, he was at the right guard spot is the point.
Oh, so yeah.
My point being, but you can't really tell that much from these practices with the, you know, the O-line to start. Was there anything that stood out in that battle today outside of Steen just being at right guard?
Well, just to me, it would be that Becton played left guard. Like, the guy plays tackle. His whole career in the NFL, they have him at right guard, left guard, and they've had him at right tackle when Lane wasn't there. So I think he's obviously going to make the team, but I think he'll end up being the most important backup offensive lineman. I think on game days, he could legitimately be the top backup at four spots. So, you know, threw up today. So I don't want to sit here and be like, he had a great
not day. After his, a great start. Yeah.
His first practice probably is not noteworthy for him, but and it's hard to tell, but I just think the fact that he even played left guard is really telling of how high they are on him and what an opportunity they want to give him to, you know, potentially start. I think, and BLG, curious what you think of this. I thought Sirianni left the door open more than I expected on Steen. He wasn't like, Tyler's the guy. We believe in him. We'll see what happens. He was like, hey, we don't have to have a depth chart out. It's a competition. We'll see what happens. And then he kind of at the end threw in there, like, Tyler's going to be out there today. But he was not effusive in his praise of Steen and saying that it's his job. So I think there's a good shot that Becton is on the field week one, whether it's because someone misses a snap or because he's just flat out starting because of injury or because Steen didn't do well.
Yeah, I did think Sirianni's lack of effusive praise there was interesting, although not disqualifying by any means. I look back at last year's coverage just out of curiosity. Among like the first practice notes that I mentioned earlier, I also saw a story in there from early in camp where Cam Jurgens was getting all the first team right guard reps last year, and Sirianni was asked about him like multiple days in the camp and like still wouldn't be like, yeah, he's the guy, even though it's very clearly the guy. So some of that, you know, is like posturing or whatever, but I'd still think overall the sentiment and the takeaway is that Steen is not locked in there. Our good friend Bo Wolf likes to point out, I think at the combine it was Sirianni was asked about, or the
We talked about this too. Notable. He didn't mention him. He forgot his name. Like, he's your starting right guard when you're listing people with that position. I'm with you. We thought that was notable.
My thing on Steen is I think he just might be a tackle. Like, or at
I've
least,
heard you
like,
say this. I don't know if I agree with you on that, but go ahead.
That's fine. So in college, I mean, he was playing defensive tackle at Tennessee before he transferred to Alabama to play left tackle. So, like, he didn't even have a lot of experience at tackle to begin with. And then they're tasking him to switch to right guard last year. Like, that's a big, like, arc of changes in a short amount of time. And I thought he looked good at tackle last year when he was kind of running with the second team there. So he doesn't have, like, the ideal measurements for tackle. So it might just kind of be, like, he is a tweener who doesn't have, like, the right true fit in the NFL. But I think if he doesn't work out at guard, it's possible he just might not be a guard and he might be a tackle.
So I agree with you that, like, I think he might end up there. And this might be my bias of covering the Eagles and only ever seeing like gigantic humans with massive long arms to tackle, but he just doesn't look like a tackle to me. I don't think he's quick enough. I think his lower body is built more like a guard. Stoutland said this offseason, he thought his measurements, he like actually reminded him a lot of Brandon Brooks physically. Now Brandon Brooks now is like, you know, probably 240 and like a business major. So I'd like Brandon Brooks, like when he played, I think is different. So look, maybe he'll end up at tackle because he can't play guard. But to me, if he goes to tackle, it'll be because they're like, yeah, this isn't working. And this is a last opportunity to try him out there.
Right.
Yeah, I think clearly they would like him to be a guard. I think that's pretty clear. I mean, he's just a placeholder until Trevor Keegan takes the job anyway, right?
Our guy. Trevor Keegan pod, by the way.
Trevor Keegan. You should know our dude. Ultimately, he'll be the right guard on this team. All right, what else? BLG, pick a position battle. Was there something that was interesting to you in terms of where people lined up, how someone looked, whether it's the linebackers, the cornerbacks, a lot of different spots that we have questions about?
Well, it's really both of those. And how many different, like, combinations the Eagles were really using, especially stands out in contrast. Like, the offense is pretty first team offense is like set, Paris Campbell was the wide receiver three. There wasn't really any kind of like major rotation going on that side of the ball. But on defense, I mean, you start out with Darius Slay and Isaiah Rodgers on the outside. Okay, that carries over from what we saw in OTAs and minicamp for the most part. But then you have Ringo mixing in there. And it specifically, it changed from, okay, first team 11, allowing 11 defense, where I said Slay and Rodgers on the outside at cornerback. And then you have Bond and Devin White at linebacker. And then they go to 7-on-7, and then it's Dakobe in there instead of Zach Bond at linebacker. And then obviously it's Keutley Ringo in there instead of Rodgers. So that was interesting. But then they switch back to 11-on-11, and it goes back. But some things are different because then it's Dean and Bond, which is like probably the most unlikely like conceptual pairing of the linebackers that they could possibly put out there. So there was to me, that speaks to, this is like a true competition, and this is Vic Fangio saying like, hey, someone earn it.
So I agree with a lot of what you said, but the conclusion for me is different. So you're right. Like, and I thought it was noteworthy at one point that they did do Bond and Nakobe, because my takeaway watching that was like, uh-oh, Nakobe is behind Devin White, which is not good for his chances of getting on the field. Here's my thing with Nakobe, and it pains me to say it because James, as I'm sure you know, BLG, is a big Nakobe guy. Like, so I never like to come on here and speak ill of his guy. But I just think as much as they praise him and as much as in the press conference today, Howie was like, remember, he was the best player on this best defense, and like actions speak louder than words. And I've now seen this team practice 5 times, including today and the offseason. I know Nakobe couldn't do it early on, but it's clearly Zach Bond and Devin White. Like maybe if Bond is really bad, Nakobe can take the job. But I think Nakobe is like a flat out backup on this team. I think he might get in certain packages, like if it's, you know, 4th and 1 and they feel he's better, like maybe there. But I do not believe it is a competition. Like, I think it is Zach Bond and Devin White as the linebackers. And then Nakobe will be battling for like getting on the field, that type of thing. Frankly, I think it might be closer between Trotter Jr. and Nakobe than it is Bond and Nakobe. Like, I do not think Nakobe will end up starting or winning that job.
I don't think Nakobe Dean is going to win. Ultimately, right. I do think he has a chance. Like, if he does ball out unexpectedly, I just don't think that's likely. But I do think he could. But I don't think it is likely.
Yeah, I do think, look, I don't think he's going to be a starter. I don't know that he'll definitely be on the team. I think he will be, but I don't know for sure. But, and look, he can't stay on the field. You know, I love the player, Georgia. You know, he hasn't shown that in the NFL for a multitude of reasons. But I do think, to BLG's point, I don't think that Zach Bond is a lock if Nakobe truly outplays him in a big way. Right. Like, I do think that is not, it's not like, look, like no one's taking Devontae's job. You know, no one's taking Dallas Goedert's job. I don't think Zach Bond is untouchable. I think if Zach Bond struggles in training camp, struggles in preseason games, and Nakobe looks awesome, I think he can win the job. I just think, to your point, ESP, I think Zach Bond is going in with a big head start, and I think he's probably likely to win the job, you know?
Yeah, so like, that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, I agree. Like, if Bond is awful and Nakobe is awesome, he could close the gap. But going in, and this is for the people on YouTube who might be watching, like, I think Bond's up here, Nakobe's here, and it's going to have to take a lot to, like, get to this point where they would pick Nakobe. Because it is worth mentioning, and I think this gets overlooked, like, they gave Bond $3.5 million guaranteed. That's not nothing. That is not just like, let's take a flyer on this guy. Last year, they gave Rashad Penny $500,000, and everybody was like, he's going to be the guy, like, da-da-da. So I think the $3.5 million is like very noteworthy. They expect Bond to be out on the field, and he picked to come here. So you guys are right. Like, there is a shot that week 1, Nakobe is the guy because he's balled out. To BLG's point, I've seen Nakobe practice maybe 40 times at this point, and I don't ever think he's balled out. So it would be unlikely, but I think that's kind of where it is. The cornerback thing, which you touched on,
Before you move on to the corners, there is another name that I don't think he's going to play linebacker much for the team, but they brought in Oren Burks, and he's a fantastic special teams player. And I'm just talking from a roster spot perspective. Like, I think there's a chance Oren Burks could make the roster still you know what I mean? Like, they signed him, they brought him in just in terms of the, I don't think it's just those guys for roster spots. I think it's just those guys to be a starting linebacker, if you know what I mean. But I do think Oren Burks is a threat to take a roster spot, whether it's from Trotter or Dean, depending on how this whole plays out.
So I view it, and I'm curious if you view it this way as well. Devin White is making the roster. Zach Bond is making the roster. Mm-hmm. Trotter Jr. is making the roster. After that, I think Nakobe has the best shot. And then I would say, like, I think Nakobe, Oren Burks, and Ben Van Sumeren are like all equal. On any day, you could convince me one is ahead of the other. Oren Burks might be a great special teams player last year, and like he's a good backup with playoff experience. I swear on my life, it's like he's not even on the team. Like, I'm not even sure I've seen him. Over
well, that's why I mentioned him, because yeah. I feel like he hasn't even been mentioned. You know,
he's like it's gone. Like, I know he's on
look,
the roster.
I will just say, I think Trotter Jr. likely will make the team, but he's a fifth round pick who could get through to the practice squad. Like, I don't think he's a lock. If he looks too small, if he struggles, I think he's likely to make the team, but you do your training camp locks. I just wouldn't say he's a lock.
So I just don't think they're cutting Jeremiah Trotter.
I think that's a likely thing. I agree. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I think it's unlikely. Yeah. I think it's unlikely. All right. How about the cornerbacks? Your thoughts, ESP, on what BLG meant?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting observation by him that they went with Isaiah Rodgers and then it was Keeley. The one thing that continues to stand out to me is they have Quinyon behind Slay, which maybe that is just so he can learn from Slay and be over there. Maybe that's how they view him on that side long term, because like Slay after this year is probably not back. But it does make me think like it's going to be tough if they put Quinyon for like 3 weeks of practice on the left. And then all of a sudden they're like, yep, you're a first round pick. You're playing on the right. So I'll be monitoring if he does move over to that other side or if he keeps behind Slay. With the Quinyon thing, I can't tell. You could tell me he could play, you know, 30 snaps a game as a backup where they get him in there in different packages. You could tell me he starts, or you could tell me it's a year where he just doesn't play a lot because he's behind Slay and they like Rodgers and Keeley. I didn't think any of the corners stood out a ton, obviously with Cooper out, you know, Maddox was in there at nickel. So no standouts really for me from the corner, other than I thought it was a little interesting. Rodgers was first, but that felt more like while they can say it's just his day, like there is a pecking order for a reason. And I thought Keeley would be ahead of him.
Yeah. I was really impressed by Rodgers in the spring. On the Mitchell point, I think, let me know if this makes any sense. I think like the Eagles drafted him with the mindset that this will be Darius Slay's replacement, as opposed to, I think, more of like the public is leaning like the Eagles drafted Quinyon Mitchell so he can replace James Bradbury this year and start right away. Like that would be great. Mm-hmm. And obviously they would welcome that outcome. That's not like the most realistic outcome that will definitely happen for sure, especially given the context of this coaching staff, which has like not played young guys to a fault at times. So I just don't think it's like this foregone conclusion that Quinyon Mitchell either has to be or will be like starting week one. He could be. He could play his way into that role. I don't think it's impossible for him, and I'm high on him, and I'm intrigued by his talent. But again, I think there is the more long-term view in mind.
I agree with
you. Elliot, how do you feel about that though, Elliot? Because you've talked many times on this pod about the importance of first round picks contributing and mattering for teams.
Yeah. So my opinion on that is a little different. Like I did say that and I feel that way, but like if Isaiah Rodgers and Keeley are balling out, then I think it matters less. I think the concerning thing would be if Quinyon, like if their corners are struggling and they're still not putting Quinyon out there.
Yes.
Like last year, Nolan Smith didn't play a ton. And why that was concerning is because they didn't have great edge rushers. Like I didn't get all over Nakobe when he didn't play his rookie year because they did have good linebackers. I still thought it was like somewhat worrisome, but it wasn't like the end of the world. And now Quinyon Mitchell is already older, if I'm not mistaken, because he played 4 years in college. So you don't want him sitting too long. But I do agree that there is a world where Quinyon like just sits all year and then next year they're like, all right, you're the guy now, like you're going in. But the tough thing with that is then he will have not played a year. He will go through rookie pains his second year, and you're looking at his third year where he's like really who you hope he can be.
I do think Mitchell has a better chance of like being a role player than let's say Keeley Ringo does. I do think like if Mitchell's not starting, and we've seen some of that in terms of they've used him in like dime packages and whatnot, I do think they will find some kind of way to get Mitchell on the field in some kind of capacity, even if he's not starting. Whereas like I don't feel that way necessarily about either.
I agree. Quinyon will play and be active.
Yeah.
Quinyon will be active. It's just a matter of whether he's the guy every snap or if he's like they're kind of finding ways to get him involved.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And that makes a ton of sense. Quinyon's not fighting for his NFL future yet. You know, like that dude has some runway. Like Keeley Ringo, if it doesn't work out for him this year, it's not like his future's over, but you know, he's probably not going to start for the Eagles in the future if he can't do it this year. Isaiah Rodgers, you know, there's a short window for those guys when they're fourth, fifth, sixth round picks and all that type of stuff. You just don't get as much leeway. All right. Was there anything else in terms of just players who stood out or moments that stood out to you? Yeah, either of you guys today?
I had one. We've talked so much this offseason about how Sirianni's like a CEO head coach and he's like on the sideline. He doesn't really, what does he do? That type of thing. I'd be curious for your perspective, but like it looked exactly the same to me. Like it did not look any different. He was not standing at different places on the field. He wasn't interacting with different players. He still had the megaphone. Like now maybe there were times I missed it where he was spending more time on the defense and I didn't see it. But to me, like if you just, as you like the expression, I think it's you that says it. Like if you dropped an alien down there and was like, what, you know, like Sirianni's the head coach. Like it's very clear Sirianni is the head coach.
Yeah, I did not specifically watch him, so I'd be lying if I said like I you know monitored it closely. But I generally agree with your sentiment. I didn't notice him out of place or anything different. The Sirianni thing is funny to me, and maybe this is a good larger point to talk about while we're all here and like a temperature check on him as a whole is that because everyone says that, right? It's like, what does he even do? Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm worried about. I'm not worried about what does he do well. And how does he specifically give the Eagles an edge? And I think that's obviously a huge thing that will be evaluated this year. You know, nothing he can do in training camp, I think, can really like build a ton of equity, I guess. It's more about like somehow things going bad and awry, and that would be really concerning. But yeah, I didn't notice that as much as you did.
Well, I think that's an interesting question. Like, what does he do well and how does he give them an edge? I think if Sirianni is coaching at his best, the two things he gives them an edge on is culture and the like details. Like, I think he is very, very into, you know, making sure like the fundamentals are correct and clock. Like last year, he wasn't good at that. In 2022, I thought he was better at it. Although obviously in the Super Bowl, the field goal decision wasn't good. I don't think Sirianni clearly gives them an X's and O's advantage, and the culture wasn't great. So if Sirianni's going to be like, they won this game because of him, it has to be great use of a challenge in the fourth quarter. The time management was outstanding. Great decision to go for it on 4th and 3. And so I think that's where he can be great. But you're right that I don't know if there's something right now where it's like, yes, that gives him the edge. I think he still has to prove that.
Yeah, I think it would have been the culture really more than anything. And, yes. And you know, and while I still believe he can build a great culture, because I saw it, I've seen him do it, you know, it's hard to lean on that when you're coming off of what we came off of.
So, yeah, I know.
Look, I think he's a culture guy. I do too. Like, yeah. I do too. I really do. I, you know, deep down, I do. But to Brandon's point, you know, if you don't do a lot of things well, or if you're not elite at play calling or whatever, like, if your thing is culture and make good decisions, you better freaking be elite at those things, you know, not just like, oh, he's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like you got to be the, you know, one of the two or three best in the league at it because you're not getting the edge other places. So it's fascinating. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. And look, I think that that's what I think is so interesting with right now. I was going to say exciting, but it might not end up being exciting. Yeah. But I do think that, you know, we've talked so much about these two guys. I mean, a year ago, we were talking about them as potentially the greatest, a chance to be the greatest head coach QB combo in the history of the franchise, which theoretically there's still a chance to happen.
Sure.
But to be at this point where at least now we're going to get answers, you know, we're going to have an idea on both of these guys and how Nick can fix this culture. Can he get Jalen to trust him? Can he get him to work him? On the flip side, how good is Jalen? Can he buy in? Can he, you know, work with Nick's here? Like all this stuff, like we're going to get answers, you know, we're going to get answers. So at least we'll be able to start
for better
to,
or worse.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. All right, Elliot, what's coming up next from a training camp perspective? What's the schedule moving forward? So people have an idea.
Well, first let me ask you just so I can mentally prepare. Are we doing final thoughts? Cause I've already thought.
Oh yeah.
So BLG, what we do on the,
we didn't warn you. Yeah. BLG.
Yeah. Sorry. What we do at the end of every pod is we just give like a final random thought. Like
I'm aware.
An observation.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. Man. Yes.
There, I love it. So you don't have to have one, but if you want one, it'd be fun. And it can be hyphen related if you want it, since obviously we're hyphen fam. So today is Wednesday.
Like, yes, you might have one, but if you want to come up with a hyphen one on the fly, go for it. Yeah,
that would be amazing. So today's Wednesday. Obviously, they practiced on Thursday. They practice again. I believe it's Vic Fangio talking before practice.
Yes.
It is. It's Vic Fangio. Then they'll practice at 10 a.m. again. My guess they'll go around the same time. And then they have an off day Friday, and then Saturday, Go Birds Radio, but they practice before then. So that's the next few days.
Okay. Awesome. So we'll have pods coming. BLG is going to be with us for more pods. I think you two will do a pod. I know we're going to record a pod Friday. We got all kinds of content coming. You'll be
the daily pod, by the way.
The daily pod, the morning. Oh yes, in the morning, Elliot. A little solo pod in the mornings too, to just set you up for the day. So if you want to know what's happening that day of practice, all that type of stuff, when the information's coming out, tune in for that as well. This is so fun. I love this.
I know, it's awesome. Yeah,
this is so great. This is like, what a beautiful day. All right. final thoughts. Elliot, floor is yours.
All right. So I got a few, but I think this is the one I'm going to go with. So I was in Maine over the past week, and obviously it was very sunny. And it's kind of wild when you think about it that the clouds block the sun. Like, you can fly through the clouds. The clouds are not
the Gophers.
The clouds are not an object in the way that, like, they're like concrete. Like, you can go through them. They're literally nothing. The sun is bright from like a billion miles away. And then those final like 3,000 feet, it's like, oh, nope, there's a cloud there. I can't get through it. It's just crazy to me that clouds block the sun. You would think that after it went all this way, it would be good to go.
Okay.
There you go.
I don't want to follow that, James. You have to go next. I can't top that.
I don't have enough scientific knowledge to explain, but I'm sure there's a scientific reason. But it is
obviously because it happens. Yeah. But it's just crazy to me that the sun is like the most powerful thing in the entire.
But I mean, like the sun can be blocked by many things, you know. I mean,
but a cloud isn't even a full object. It's like, I don't know.
But just because something's a gas or a whatever doesn't mean that it can't create like something that is.
No, I know. But the point I'm making is, if there was a cloud in front of me, I could put my hand through it. Like, I fly through clouds. And so, yes, a house, I understand. Like, yes, that blocks the sun. But it's crazy to me that something that's a billion miles away and it can be bright for so long runs into like a pile of gas. And it's like, oh, well, so much for that.
Well, like, it could run into a piece of paper that could block the sun. How is that? I know it's like a little object. More physical, but like, yeah. I know.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm right. I'm kind of on board, kind of not on board. All right. My final thought, I mean, obviously my final thought is just to say that I'm so happy that Brandon is here. I love you, Brandon. I've loved you for so long. We've been best friends for a long time. I'm really happy to be back. And I will give you the, I forgot, you did know we do final thoughts because I've read you my Zoe quotes that I use final thoughts before. So I'll give you the most recent Zoe quote. We were at dinner. Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out comes on. And Zoe, in the middle of this packed restaurant, just goes, oh, I know this one. Who let the dogs out? Who? And just starts doing it and just keeps doing it for like 3 minutes at the top of her lungs in the middle of this restaurant. She is my daughter.
That is amazing. Me.
Yes.
That sounds like something.
The excitement in her eyes when she knew it was a song she knew. And then the thrill to let the rest of the restaurant know. It was good.
Amazing. Classic Zoe. I love it.
Classic Zoe.
Good one as always.
I love the staying power of the Baja Men, or at least this song.
Yeah.
And also, obviously, the mirror that Zoe Seltzer holds up to James' life in a huge way, in a very humbling way. I've seen
many times.
It's like, oh, this really puts everything into perspective. I have three final thoughts.
Yes!
I'll hit to them quickly as I can. Number one, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it. Looking forward to, you know, doing more pods here as the uncertain BGN radio future hangs in the balance. I don't know what's going on with it. I'm trying to bring it back. I'm doing everything on my end to make it possible. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's not that simple. So I would just say, if you're hoping for something, stay tuned. Hopefully good news comes about.
Yeah. And BLG is going to be here with us as much as he can or wants to. Like, it's, you know, we want him to be here is the main point.
Number two, ESP, I'm sorry to call you out on your out. Number one,
let's go.
Sorry to inform you, I don't have a hyphen in my name. We do have three. We do both go by three initials, but I don't. You're the hyphen.
Yeah.
I'm just the three.
I should have realized that when he said it. I was thinking there. I'm like, oh yeah.
What? So is Lee the middle name?
Lee is the middle name. Yeah.
Okay. Never mind. You're not a hyphen. You do go by BLG and it is ESP, but that is firmly not a hyphen.
So I think three initial beat writers is probably the one we should go. ESP and BLG. It rhymes too, which is
being a little pedantic there, but just, you know. Nice. And then number three, Elliot, a long awaited day. You have to follow me back on Twitter.
Oh, dude.
You have to do it. It's time.
So honest to God, I swear on my life, I literally 2 minutes before, I'm going to show you, I brought up. And the funniest part of this is, the funniest part of this is, like, obviously, like, I've been like wanting to follow you for a while, but I've been waiting for the moment of you coming on the pod.
James has said that. So yes.
Yeah. And I was confirmed. I was going to do it at the beginning of the pod, but then it didn't really happen. But here we go. Ready?
And that's why I brought it up to you. I wouldn't just be like, hey, I have to.
I told Brandon about this. This is not Elliot. Like, it wasn't like you forgot till now. I think about it.
I would say literally almost every time I see you. Here we go.
See the moment. Bam.
Here it goes. Huge. Ready?
Amazing.
We did it. Look at you with a subscribe button too. I gotta.
That's right. Yeah.
So
you have boys. Now 84,200 and at least one more follower.
I love it.
happy to have you back on the timeline.
I make your break.
Although honestly, dude, you get retweeted so much. It's like you're on the, like, even though I didn't physically follow you, I was seeing your stuff nonstop. But no, there I was going to do that. And then like, I was like, but yes, I'm happy you brought it up.
Yes. I have two Twitter badasses with me.
Here we go.
Which is good. Cause you know, I never tweet. So it's good. So thank you guys. All right. We'll be back again soon. More post-practice pods, reaction pods, the show on Saturday, all kinds of good stuff coming. We're so back. This is awesome.
Let's do it. We love you.
This is awesome. We'll talk to you guys soon. He's Elliot. He's BLG. I'm James.